or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Landing a job by answering an ad has long been dead. In the internet era, employers simply got drowned in applications, many of which were not qualified to do the job. The job ad approach was then followed by the in-person networking-centric approach. You pitched your existing network plus new people you met in person, like, for example, using informational interviews. And in-person networking is still crucial. But today, it is much abetted through the use of LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, and it's no longer optional. A 2011 Shroom survey, Shroom, the Society for Human Resource Management, found that 56% of HR managers use LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter to source candidates. That's where they find them. They dig them out, up from just 34% in 2010. That's a 50% more than a 50% increase in 1 year. And you can be sure, therefore, that in 2012, the percentage of hirers who were going to, instead of putting an ad out and reading 9 zillion BS-filled ads, are going to find the people who have the most interesting presences on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, etc. People who are posting great, interesting content. Why? Employers want to recruit what are called passive candidates, people who are not looking for a job. Because they believe, to be honest, probably correctly, that the pool, at least on average, the pool of people who are currently employed and active in their professions, making useful contributions to discussion groups, etc., and have very interesting profiles on LinkedIn or tweeting all kinds of interesting things, professional stuff, those people on average are more likely to be a better hire than the pool of unemployed people who have no presence on LinkedIn, no interesting posts in their fields, professional blogs, Twitters, etc. Well, with me to show how we can succeed in today's tough job market, in which employers are finding candidates in a much more rigorous way than the old way. Scary, I must admit, but nonetheless, it's real. Anyway, is the author of Job Searching with Social Media for Dummies, Joshua Waldman. Joshua, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Hey, Marty. How's it going today?
I am well. Looking forward to talking to you about this kind of nuts and bolts, no-nonsense problem that job seekers are facing today. So let's make it real instead of the usual, you know, too often book authors are talking in, you know, what would be ideal or what other people should do. But if you, Joshua Waldman, had to look for a job, like you're a marketing guy, you're a communications guy, if you had to look for a job, say, as a marketing communications specialist, working for somebody, a government agency, a company, whatever, and you had already done the obvious, you have a complete LinkedIn profile, how would you integrate LinkedIn, Facebook, and or Twitter into your actual job search?
I would use all of them. It's a great question, putting yourself in the shoes of the job seeker today. You know, it's like trying to build a house with only a hammer. You're going to need all the tools available to you.
Yep.
Hammer, saw, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook as the big three social networks. Really, you know, those are the ones that if you're active on, you look good, and you're also reaching out and meeting new people. For me, I would start doing those three as well as blogging. Blogging has been fantastic.
Right. Now, the key really is how. Using them is one thing, but how would Joshua, let's say the Lord Nemko issues an edict that Joshua cannot be self-employed anymore. No books. His book, Job Searching with Social Media for Dummies, is hereby been eradicated. No, you've got to get a job now, and you're broke. You're dead broke. You're sitting, you're eating ramen. You're now going to say, I got to get a job. What does Joshua, how does he use LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter to get a job and fast? Because you don't want to take a year because you're going to be homeless if you don't do that.
You know, I would need a hook. I would need to find out that thing even before I got on the network.
Okay.
Any of them. What is it that me, Joshua Waldman, can contribute to the world of corporate communication?
Do you know?
I think so.
Okay, what is it? What is it?
Well, for me, I think, okay, let's say this is, let's call this live coaching. I think I'm very good at creating buzz. getting people to talk about your brand, your service, your product.
Great. That's great. There, I love short. So if you were going to tell corporate America, I can create buzz, that's memorable. It's a soundbite. I love it. Okay, now go from there. How do you then use that? What's the next step for Joshua Waldman?
Next step, I'm going to put the word buzz in the middle of a blank piece of paper, and I'm going to have five branches come out. What are five things that I can authoritatively speak about? Buzz, creating buzz, you know, going out there. I'll probably come up with five or six categories, and from those categories...
Let's do it. No, let's switch again. First of all, listeners, dear listeners, I'm liking this. So you play the game, too, whether or not you're looking for a job. Write one word. His word was buzz. Great word. Love it. I thought it was right on the money. Smart. Needed. You, my dear listeners, write one word that would define you in the job market. What differentiates you? And then, like you said, put it in the middle of a piece of paper. Put a few spokes around that. Make that the hub of a wheel.
Yep.
And go and add some spokes. What would be the ways in which you could use that one word, or how you could add value to an employer? And I know a lot of listeners to this station don't like corporate America. So fine, make it your target, the nonprofit you want to work for, the government agency, the small company, the large company, or self-employment. Go ahead, continue, Joshua.
Right on, sure. And then so each of those categories are going to be major subjects that I'm going to have tweets. I'll write some sample tweets. Maybe I'll even start writing my headline and my bio and kind of refining that online presence based on some of the categories that I've defined, the ways that I'm differentiating myself.
Okay, what are your 3, 4, 5 categories that would be the spokes of your wheel of which buzz is the hub?
Let's say content distribution, community development. Let's find another one. Relationship building on Twitter.
Okay, great. Stop. That's wonderful. Yep. So now you've got 3 spokes that come out of your one word buzz. Now what do you do?
Okay, so now I want to first, you know, once that's sort of defined, I want to make sure that I'm looking good online. So if people finally find me on it in a passive way, that they're going to see me and within an instant know exactly what it is I can contribute to their organization.
Terrific. So, instant is the right word, folks. Instant. Yeah. What that means, a photo as well as the profile headline. What would be a sample profile? Am I right about that, that the picture matters?
Oh, it certainly does matter.
Right.
Very much so.
So, okay. So look, what would be your image? What would be the picture, and what would be the headline on, let's say, Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter?
Well, you know, if I'm thinking about the word buzz, the picture is going to have to be amicable. So a very, you know, smiling, dynamic picture, perhaps in some kind of an action. maybe me speaking, articulating something, bright colors in the background, dynamic negative space around the head.
What's dynamic? What does dynamic negative space around the head mean?
Well, okay, so imagine that, visualize 2 different pictures. One is a mugshot.
Right.
Jail, and the other is, a professionally taken photograph. What are the main differences? Well, in a mugshot, the subject of the picture is staring directly into the camera. There's uniform negative space around the head. There's not a lot of dynamics at all. You know, it's very plain. Whereas a more professional photo, you know, if you've ever had a professional photographer work with you, they're going to tell you to put your shoulder towards the camera, tilt your head, look this way. Tilt that way, smile, make this expression, make that expression. Why do they tell you to do these things? It's because they're trying to make that photograph jump out from that two-dimensional medium.
Okay, so let's play with, I want to make this as concrete as we can because it's fun and it's because it's helpful. So yeah. Joshua Waldman's going to have a image, a very tight image, only head and shoulders or just head, but with hands, and it's got to convey the word buzz. What would you try to, if you were that photographer, you know, I know you've written about this in your book and you write about this all the time. So what would you make sure was in the frame of your image so that it embodied buzz?
You know, at some level, I would let a professional photographer make that decision. I would probably want to hire someone. I've got a couple of great contacts. And I'm going to tell them, look, you know, I want to communicate these 5 emotions. I want to communicate this sentiment. Go do your work. And I'm going to let someone who's a professional think about those things.
Okay. Here's just the first thing that comes to mind for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old saying about when you're on TV, you're supposed to make love to the camera. There's 2 ways to look directly into the camera. One is deer in the headlights, And the other is you are totally connecting with it as though you were right about to make love to that camera. And so I would argue that if you're trying to create buzz, there it's about connection. And so I would have this almost making love look, and I'd have my hands right near my face in a pointing outward in a way that's like, I am connecting with you. That's my first intuition. Does your reaction resonate or not resonate with that?
You know, I think being present during the shot is very important. That can create connection, though. I don't think pointing would work.
Pointing. I was saying kind of holding your hands up, upward, palms up. You know, anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sure. You know, a great example of a wonderful headshot is Pam Slim. If you go to Pam Slim's profile on LinkedIn, you'll see that she's resting her hand. She's a business coach. She's resting her hands, her chin on her hands. And, you know, that very much conveys a sense of listening and attentiveness.
Mm.
You know, and I think that's a very, very good use of hands in a headshot.
Good. Okay.
You know, it could be one hand, your chin resting on one hand. It could be the hand out facing the camera.
I think the resting your hand on the chin is a cliche. I use that a lot. It's for myself, but I worry that it's a little cliched. Let's turn to your headline. So now we've got, what would be your headline on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter in light of those few words? What would your headline be?
So the question is, what do I do that other people would want to hire me for?
Right.
And so, well, if people are trying to create buzz in their organizations, product launch, services, whatever it is, you know, that headline really needs to resonate with that organization.
Right.
Everyone walks around, right? I mean, you know this. Everyone walks around with their problems in their head.
Yep.
So they're going to be on LinkedIn thinking about their problems. Wow, here's a profile that totally resonates with the problem that I'm thinking about right now.
That's the key. So what would Joshua put?
Okay. So it'd be something like, you know, dynamically creating, getting people to talk about your product or service right now.
Okay. I hate the word dynamically. That's a cliche, but I like the general concept. So let me try this one back on you and you can push back on me. So it would be something like, I get people to talk about ... and then buy your product.
I don't like the word I in the headline. It works in the summary.
Okay. I like the word I because if you use, you know, make, you know how in dummies books they always tell you to use the gerund, making people buy your product. I don't like it in that case. I think this is about a relationship. This is about you. Do you disagree?
I do. I think the headline isn't the place for you, for I. I think the headline is the place for you.
Okay. Take one more shot at it and then we're going to move on.
Sure. So, I don't know, boy, it's hard to come up with something in 30 seconds. I like to start with you if possible, or just stating the facts. So, expert at, that's probably a cliche.
That's all right. Expert at creating buzz for your product, creating buzz and sales for your product.
Getting people to talk about your product right now.
Okay, great. So getting people to talk about your product right now. I like it. Okay. So now we've got the photo that's very dynamic and not doesn't look like a post office wall, and you've got a very compelling action oriented sound by headline. Now, how are you going to use LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and blogging to get your job that you desperately need because you're eating ramen and you're at home? By the way, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Joshua Waldman. He is the author of Job Searching with Social Media for Dummies. And go ahead.
I might move on to Twitter. Twitter is a real-time medium, which means that as soon as something is posted, you see it. And what's really important about that, and of course, now that you've done your picture and your headline, you transfer all those things over.
Sure.
Make small changes to the headline. I think with Twitter, you want to be a little bit more personal, a little bit funnier, a little bit more nitty-gritty. So we might have, what was our headline for LinkedIn? Getting people to talk about your product or service right now.
Yes.
Then you might, you know, for Twitter, you have a little bit more space. You have 160 characters rather than 120. So you might add something like, you know, so you think you could dance, fan, loves chocolate, you know, whatever. Make something very personal, make you a person.
Okay.
At that point, now you can start to follow, and this is what I would do. I would go out and actually target organizations. So which 10 companies do I want to work for right now? I'm going to go out and follow them. And I'm going to create a list in Twitter so that every time they tweet, I have a lot of followers. 15,000, I want to create a separate list so I can really, really pinpoint my focus on those 10 companies. What are they talking about? I'm going to spend a week looking at what they're talking about. Maybe I'm going to find a product or service that's being launched right now. Wow. If I do, bingo. I can reply, I can retweet, start to develop that relationship. But, you know, what happens is if there's a product or service that I'm trying to create buzz, well, there's a need for what I have to offer.
You know, your volume is going, Joshua, your volume is going up and down a lot. Is there something on your phone that you're using that's making the volume go up and down? Because it's becoming a problem.
It could be the distance of my face to the microphone.
Yes. Why don't you stay solid in one direction? Because otherwise, listeners would go nuts. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So, what didn't you catch? Well, that's
why don't you? Well, let's go. You know, this was critical enough that let's go back to the beginning. So, we're saying how you. You said you'd first go to Twitter, and what would you do? Well, you arrive at Twitter now. You've got your headline. You've got your photo. Why don't you tell us what you would do?
I would go out and actually follow those 10 companies that I'm targeting. And once I'm following them, I'm going to create a list.
And following them means you're going to be getting into your inbox, essentially, all of their tweets. Continue.
Exactly. Every time they tweet, in real time, I'm going to see exactly what they're talking about.
Right.
And that's going to give me a really, really good sense of what's on their mind right now as an organization. And more specifically, marketing people tend to really jump all over Twitter. And I'm going to know what the marketing department is thinking about as well.
Terrific. Continue.
So I'm going to look for hooks, right? Things that I can retweet back to my followers, tweets that they make that I can comment on. And I'm, at that point, that's sort of the beginning of engagement.
And by the way, by retweeting, let's say you're wanting to, I'm making this up, you know, you're wanting to work for Apple Computer. And so you're following Apple and they're really excited about the upcoming iPhone 5. And so you retweet that immediately with a clever little add-on that would be a buzz-building little phrase or whatever. They see when their posts have been retweeted, and now they're saying, oh, this guy not only likes our stuff, but he adds value. He's clever. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. Brands are monitoring the use of their brand names all over social media.
Continue.
Right. So engagement starts to happen. Perhaps even replying to them, saying, you know, maybe they're asking questions. I'm replying with an answer. You know, engagement is built slowly over time, probably over the course of 10 to 15 days at this point. Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that today, in today's era, we're talking about a relationship being built in 10 to 15 days. It used to be two to three years. Continue.
Right. Of course, a Twitter relationship is the beginning of what we would call a real relationship.
Right.
But that's of course, the next step, right? Which is to say, look, you know, we've been tweeting for the last couple of weeks. Let's have a conversation. And at that point, they're probably going to be following you back, which means you can direct message them. And so what I would do.
How do you do that?
You've
made the investment for 10 or 15 days. You've been retweeting a number of their retweeting. By the way, for those who don't know, means basically saying, I like this guy's post here. You should read it. And it's good. And it just repeats the tweet. And anyway, so you've done that three or four times. You've had a couple of clever things. Now you want to make the pitch to develop at least a Twitter relationship as preliminary to a real relationship. What would you word it? What would you actually say?
You know, I love to use curiosity. And so for me, it's all about, you know, I have an idea that I think you would love to hear about. Please direct message me your email address. Or this is my phone number. Could you give me a call today?
Love it. Just love it, Joshua. Continue. Now what?
So, yeah, 9 times out of 10, they're like, wow, that's audacious. It looks like they're gonna provide me, the organization, with some value, and they typically get back to you.
I like it.
And that's a conversation with a human being at a company that you're targeting. And at this point, you know, you should know what questions you're going to ask, what value you're going to add. And that's like any kind of informational interview.
Love it. Okay. So let's go beyond that now. So that was a great way to describe how you'd use Twitter. Would you then, honestly, if it was Joshua Waldman, would you put all your eggs into that basket? Or what, if anything, would you do with LinkedIn or Facebook?
Twitter's great for linking, you know, and so they might have a question with coming back to you saying, just send me your resume or something like that. Mm-hmm. When people ask you for your resume, they're not really asking you for your resume. They're asking you for more, and they just want to know more about you. And those are great opportunities to send links to your LinkedIn profile or even your blog, which in a lot of cases can be very, very powerful.
I want to interrupt. That's a really good point. You know, most of us have crappy resumes. I don't care how polished they are, but resumes are like a naked body. They're designed to expose all your warts, the fat belly you have, everything else. Whereas if you send them your blog or you send them your bio, you get the chance to show the highlights of what you want. You're essentially putting clothes on that imperfect body of yours. Is that correct?
I would even add to that, you know, and I would say, you know, the job search these days is not about you, the candidate. It's now about what the organization wants. Resume does a really good job at telling the world what you did. It doesn't do a good job telling the world what you're going to do for them.
Correct. I love
it. And LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, all of these things allow you, now they don't by default do this, but they allow you an opportunity to channel that kind of a message.
That's why I am such a big fan of, instead, when they ask for your resume, either A, sending a bio, B, sending them a white paper that you may have custom written. Let's say you've had no experience, let's say doing airline inspections for the FAA, and that's what you want to do. You go and you write five keys to expert FAA airline, whatever it is, aircraft inspections in 2013 and beyond. That ends up being, as what you were saying, shows them what you would do for them in the future rather than what you've done in the past. Make sense?
Exactly.
All right. Continue. Now what would you do?
Now you're directing them. Hey, tell me more about, you know, send me your resume, AKA tell me more about yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Check out my LinkedIn profile. Boom. They see the picture, professional, dynamic. It's sticking out. Right, it's going to stick in their memory. Headline, going to draw them in. The summary is going to make them even more curious about what you and what you have to offer. And then you're taking advantage of the LinkedIn applications. Like, here are the three books I'm reading, and you know, here's a stream from my blog, so you can see that what I'm thinking about right now.
Okay, what I also think is critical is recommendations. LinkedIn, you know, you can obviously the old days of, you know, submit your references after the interview process is dead. Most employers now are looking at LinkedIn to look at your LinkedIn recommendations, but all recommendations are positive. You wouldn't have put them up there otherwise, and they tend to be BS. So what do you have any advice about how to go about getting recommendations on LinkedIn that are actually going to stand out and make that employer say, huh, wow, that Joshua is special?
You know, there's a few things to keep in mind with LinkedIn recommendations. First of all, never write your own. Those days are over. If you had to write your 50 in LinkedIn recommendations, they'd all somehow, funnily, sound all the same.
Right.
But I think that, you know, there's a feature within LinkedIn that people do not take advantage of, and that is that you can actually hide and show a recommendation. So go ahead and get your vast number of recommendations that people like to do. That's fine. But show your top three, right? So that way they can see the large number, but they'll see the best that you have to offer.
The tip that I would add to that, I love that idea. That's really good. But I would also, in asking for a recommendation, I would just ask one sentence. I would ask them, mention something specific. What is your most vivid memory of something that I did that you liked? Because specificity is the antidote to BS. If it's a real specific anecdote, that's what people are going to remember. Make sense?
Absolutely. There's another question I would include in that, and that would be, you know, would you? So I'm asking, let's say I'm asking Marty, please recommend me, and you say, so what should I include in this? Marty, could you answer this question for me? Would you hire me, and why?
Good, love it. Okay, let's back up a bit. I want to talk a bit about LinkedIn groups. There is, you know, there is this notion, and sometimes it's called a talent community, and sometimes it's simply called your professional presence. But today, ever more employers are looking to see, as I said at the intro to the show, they're looking to see people who are making smart and regular contributions to online discussion groups, whether it be the LinkedIn groups or their professional associations groups or whatever, because that is a real sign that the person is very involved in their career rather than their career being an afterthought and they're much more interested in, you know, their hobbies and their family and getting drunk. But it's a pain in the ass. It's a lot of work to be blogging. I blog like a fiend because I love to blog. I love to write. It's who I am. But for most people, writing isn't doesn't come that easily. When is it worth taking the time to blog regularly, to go on and join LinkedIn groups, to make that an active presence? Is that when is that worth the time and when is it not?
I think it's always worth the time. I think there's almost no choice anymore. You have to have a voice. You have to get out there because your competition is doing that. You've got to have an opinion. You know, that's what our economy is based on. We're thought leaders. We're thought machines. And, you know, that means our ideas, our innovations, our criticisms, our perceptions and opinions matter. Those are money. That's why people hire us.
That's too broad brush. For me, here's my take on it. If you are an ideation, what I call an ideationally rich person, if you are a person who's got a lot of ideas, if you can write with reasonable facility and doesn't take forever, you do it. Other than that, I do not. If you're a more normal person, it's very easy to generalize from book authors and radio talk show hosts who are always about ideas. That doesn't mean everybody should do it. If you, dear listener, are somebody who is not so fluent with ideas, who does not write well, you're only going to show your inferiority on that dimension when you try to be actively participating. Ask yourself, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it comes. I mean, you might sit there listening to this and saying, how am I going to come up with one new idea? Well, you can. If you start coming up with one new idea a week, your brain will start to get used to this and more will come. And then all of a sudden you'll have like three new ideas a week. You've got to train yourself to come up with this. And anyone can write 250-word little article with an opinion once a week. It would take you half an hour.
Don't agree. I like the optimism. I've seen people writing, and some people just write terribly. And all it does is, you know, if that's not your vehicle of choice, if you're more about being a diligent, good, hard worker who handles the details well, you're competing in the world of blogs and writing is merely going to show your inferiority on a dimension. Just like I would not want to show my abilities by drawing. I can't draw more than stick figures. I have to use the vehicles that work best for me. So I think it's one size is not going to fit all. I want to turn to Facebook. First of all, let your listeners know, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Joshua Waldman. He is the author of Job Searching with Social Media for Dummies. So we've for the listeners just joining us, what we've been doing is we've been pretending that Joshua Waldman was unemployed, eating ramen, homeless, and had to get a job, and he couldn't write books, and he couldn't have his consulting firm and his website, careerenlightenment.com. He couldn't do any of that stuff. He'd have to get a job, and because he's a communication marketing kind of guy, he was going to have to get a job like in marketing communications for a company or a nonprofit or whatever. So we've walked through the use of Twitter, we've used Facebook. How about, and we haven't talked about Facebook, would you add Facebook to the equation of your job search, and how?
I would use it in my job search. It has a unique place. If you think about how companies hire, especially larger companies where they have this, perhaps an internal or separate recruiting organization, and then you have a hiring manager, the person who's actually going to be making the final decision about you. Recruiting professionals do not go on Facebook. They know that it could open up a can of worms as far as OFCCP compliance.
Privacy issues, yeah.
Privacy, anti-discrimination. So they don't go there. But what I found is that hiring managers who are not versed in employment law tend to go in places where they probably shouldn't, but they do anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's a fact, right? Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, they're going to be looking you up. Mm-hmm. They're going to see if you're on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And Facebook has a lot of interesting features, including making certain aspects of your profile public.
Right.
And, if they can see consistency, you know, when a hiring manager sees an inconsistency, your resume doesn't really look like the messaging on your LinkedIn profile. And they go onto your Facebook profile and, wow, that's totally, feels like a different person.
Right.
That feeling is hard to quantify, but it's there.
Right. So if it's you're all about, if in Facebook, in LinkedIn, you're talking about how professional you are, and then in Facebook, all it is about beer bongs and goth and wet T-shirt parties, that might be a problem.
Well, I mean, that's the obvious one. But, I mean, more subtly, I think it can be, let's say for me, let's go back to our example right from the beginning, which is, okay, I'm positioning myself as someone good at creating corporate buzz, and my public-facing Facebook profile talks about how I, was in a sales organization. Okay, totally different message.
Got
totally
it.
Different kind of
good point.
That not going to fly.
Good point. Okay, so consistency is great. So how, other than consistency, how would you use Facebook differently than or similarly to how you'd use LinkedIn? because clearly you can post messages to all of your Facebook quote friends.
Well, you can also post messages to the world to make them public,
okay,
so that people can subscribe to you and even just see what you're posting and Google will index it, which means that you can now have an active real-time journal of your job search, which I've seen some people use in a very effective way where they're showing what they did.
Interesting.
I reached out to 10 companies and, they were, maybe you don't want to use them by name. That can get you into trouble. But talk about yourself in the context of how passionate you are about this and how serious you are about your job search.
What if I say I disagree with that? Because that makes you look like an active job seeker, somebody who's got to work really hard to land a job, rather than what employers are looking for, which is a passive job seeker, somebody who's great and they're having to pluck out.
Yeah, that's true. So in that case, maybe what you're doing publicly on Facebook is talking about your industry and your passion for it.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really basically another LinkedIn profile, essentially.
Yes.
Right. Alas and alack. Now, speaking of which, Facebook, of course, originally started as, basically it was a social thing. But now it's, for the reasons we've outlined, it ends up having to be business-oriented, especially if you're a job seeker. There is a fast-growing site called BranchOut, and it adds a professional layer onto your Facebook profile. To explain BranchOut to us and whether you think in this now in 2012, 2013, is that worth adding?
I think it is worth adding, but just know that of the 3 million jobs that are listed on BranchOut, most of them are entry level, so they're targeted at college grads. If I were a college grad, I would definitely be all over that. For me, no. I don't think there'd be a lot of immediate value. Perhaps there would be next year, the year after that, as it continues to grow. But BranchOut is a great way to actually build a brick wall between your personal profile and network and a more professional profile and network.
We've been talking about basically how to market yourself using Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, but it's also a good source of finding companies. There was an assumption in what you made at the beginning. You said, the first thing I would do is I'd go on Twitter and I'd find 10 companies that I'd follow them and learn what they were interested in. But how do you pick out? Everybody, knows about Apple and Google, but those are the jobs that are hardest to get. Google gets 1,500 applications unsolicited every day. So how do you use LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter perhaps to find smaller companies or nonprofits or whatever that you might want to make those the targets of your job search?
Well, let's start with Facebook and go backwards, right? So with Facebook, applications like Jibe or even BranchOut are able to actually show you what companies are represented in your network. So you might have a friend from high school who you really haven't talked to but is in your network somewhere, and they're actually working at a company that could be very interesting for you.
This is Jive, J-I-V-E, right?
Yes.
Okay, continue.
And BranchOut can do this as well. So tell me what companies are represented by my friends, quote-unquote friends, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, now you have an in with these companies. You're going to find 50 to 100 companies immediately in your network that probably you've never even heard of.
Great.
So it's a great way to start your research. Now, the next step is probably going to go back to LinkedIn, where there's more advanced company filters, where you can say, company size, company headquarter location, and so forth.
Let me make sure I understand, because I'm a little fuzzy here, too. Now, in Facebook, is Jive an app that goes that you can simply access right on Facebook, or is this an add-on you have to go to a separate website? What's Jive?
It's actually Jibe, J-I-B-E.
Okay, J-I-B-E, because I haven't used that. Okay. So is that an app right on Facebook, or is that something you got to go to a separate website?
It's a separate website, and what it will do is it will connect. It will essentially import your Facebook friends and give you some more of an employment type of statistic around it.
That's great. That's really fabulous. That means that you can find it. Because that's where you're more likely to get hired from somebody. That way you automatically know somebody at these companies. Now, and you said you then go back, though, to LinkedIn. So what you would do is once you get the names of those companies, you'd go on LinkedIn to get their profiles to get more information about those companies? Is that it?
Exactly. I'd want to know more about these companies. What industry are they in?
Sure.
What sector are they in?
And just Google them. You can just Google them. You don't even have to just go to LinkedIn.
Of course you could. But I think companies are spending more and more time on LinkedIn. Our company pages are now able to post status updates. Configure products and services that they're offering. So it can be a streamlined way of getting information.
I love it. We were out of time, so I just wanted to, I've talked at the top about talent communities. That's a term I've heard a lot lately. Mm. What is, explain that to us and why it's so critical if it is.
Talent communities are the way to go. So if you're focused on your top 10 companies and they offer a talent community, definitely join it.
Tell us what it happening. Is. Tell us what it is.
Yeah, so it's essentially a database of interested job seekers or candidates, as a recruiter would call it. A recruiter is not inclined to post jobs publicly anymore. They're more inclined to build a pool of people who have actively shown interest, raised their hands to say, I want to work with this company. And so let's start that conversation rather than sending out a job posting on Monster and getting 1,000 spammy resumes and boiling
them down.
That's
what we said at the very top. That is so critical. That is the revolutionary change that's gone on in the world of job searching. It's not about answering ads. It's about creating a relationship, starting a Twitter, trying to get them to start contacting with you, and so that you can end up in their talent database so that they will then, when they have a job opening, pluck you out. Is that a fair summary?
Exactly. They're going to gauge your level of engagement and interest, and they're going to just send 10 people a job opening rather than 1,000.
Exactly. All right. We're out of time. I want to give you one softball last question. Is there one thing that you, Joshua Waldman, want to stress to our listeners, either something you've said before or something you haven't?
Yeah, absolutely. There's one thing. Before you start filling out those social media profiles, think about the value that you can offer to your target organizations. Get that really, really clear in your head first.
Getting buzz was a great one for you. I thought you did a great job of that. And you also did a great job in writing the book. He wrote the book, Job Searching with Social Media for Dummies. He's also got a very generous blog and he does blog about every day or two with something smart, fresh, his own stuff as well as guest blogs. His website is careerenlightenment.com. Is that a fair summary, Joshua?
Absolutely, Marty. Thanks so much.
It's been a pleasure having you as a guest on Work with Marty Nemko. Bye-bye. Okay, so now we turn to you, dear listeners. If you have a question or a comment related to either social media job searching, I spend a lot of time with my clients these days helping them use Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter to land a job, but also any aspect of figuring out what you want to be, your self-employment problem, your decision about whether you want to get self-employed. Maybe you want to run your 10-second or 30-second soundbite, you know, your elevator pitch by me. Any career-related problem, this is your time. I do what are called 3-minute workovers. Whether you're 16 or 76, unemployed, self-employed, well-employed or not, I can usually at least give you a baby step forward, maybe even a giant step. The phone number right now, this is the time before the lines fill up. Here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go to the phones, there is something timely. My intrepid colleague, Maureen Nelson, she works for the One Stop, which is a big government agency that provides a lot of services for free, which you really should take advantage of. You know, I know everybody's talking about budget deficits, but we are in a Keynesian society where government spending continues to be relatively high, and so many resources are going to government-provided job searches, services. So, for example, she gave me a couple of time-sensitive programs that the government is offering, and one is a series of workshops called How to Sell to Government, and a bunch of other workshops for small business. Those are occurring at something called the Small Business Development Center, which is, again, a government program. You can learn about those online. Go to Small Business Development Center. Most of them have those. Then there are veteran retraining assistant programs. So they'll pay for 12 months of retraining in high-demand occupations. If you're an unemployed veteran between 35 and 60, there is a hiring incentives for employers. They'll reimburse business owners 50% of a worker's wages while they're learning on the job, up to $4,000. You know, and all of these one-stops, these are all available, at least you can find out about them through one-stops. They all have what is called the WIA program, which offers free career coaching and workshops and sometimes paid training, as I've outlined, to get reemployed. So just Google, go to find your nearest one-stop. Go to servicelocator.org, servicelocator.org, and you'll find one near you. And, you know, the taxpayers are paying for it. So before you go see private career counselors like me, especially, I mean, if you're a very high-level person, the one-stops aren't that useful. Then you're, you know, a really good high-level private career counselor can help. But if you're a more average person or entry-level person or dislocated person, those one-stops are gold. Gold, gold, gold. Okay, all our lines are lighted up. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Yeah, my name's Duncan, and I'm interested in getting some work as a freelance editor or proofreading, transcribing, things like that, and I'm not sure exactly how to get started.
I have two ways that I would do it. Number one is I would take published, well, I guess one, it all boils down to one. I would take published material, whether it be in a book or on a website or whatever, and I would edit it, stuff that they already had their editor. And you do some copy editing and or proofreading and show that you can add value even to stuff that they have already published. That's going to be the strongest case you can make. Now, do you have a specific area of interest, either content area of interest or experience that you would like to be doing writing and, you know, copy editing and proofreading about?
Well, music, specifically jazz.
Okay. So I would be going to, you know, everything from Keyboard Magazine online to, I know BAM is dead, but I'd look at every major, I'm sure there are book publishers like Chapel, I'm thinking about, you know, some, there are these various music publishers. And I would be going, you know, in the old days they had Tupper and Reed, the sheet music store. But I would look at a bunch of sheet music or music books and music instruction books. Hal Leonard, again, that's another one. I'd go to all the music, you know, publishers. I may even go to ASCAP, which protects the rights of people who have written stuff. I'd look for every entity that publishes music stuff and take their published material and show them a before and after. You know, like the person who was the, you know, obese and then went on Nutrisystems and is 40 pounds thinner. Use before and afters to show your stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello.
Hi, Marty. This is Aaron Michael. I live in San Francisco.
Hi, Aaron. How can I help?
Yes, I do abstract fine art. I haven't done it professionally before. And I want to start doing it professionally.
Great. What I would do, my first thing would be, you know, it's everybody's, all your friends and your relatives are all going to be, and your teachers are going to all be encouraging. But in the end, if you're trying to go professional and make a business, you've got to talk to the people who will be paying you, not the people who you are paying, like your teachers. So I would either join in an open studio with some other, you know, very often, like certain, you're in San Francisco, there are these open studios that are provided. Join the team of open studios where you're going to stop at an open studio, or spring for the money. There is all these different art fairs. You probably, you know, the best ones are juried ones. Like there's the famous Marin Art Fair. There was one at Fort Mason last week in San Francisco. Go and see if you can get into, ideally, a juried art fair. And get your stuff there. But if you can't, any kind of old, you know, there are in the summer, this is the right time. There is, it seems like every week in the areas where the people have money, because that's where they put the art fairs, because only rich people can afford art, you know, in Walnut Creek and on the peninsula, you know, there are all these art fairs. Go in and spring for a booth for one of them and then see if, in fact, the audience is interested in buying your stuff. That's the best way to know whether you can and should go professional, and it's also a relatively low-cost way to go. Then, one other thing I would do, I would take either, and I know this sounds too pushy, but it's my way, I would have pieces of my art. What size are your pieces?
18 by 24 and smaller.
Perfect. I'd stick a half a dozen of them in my car, and I would go to Google Maps, and I would find, like I would first of all Google to find a half a dozen or a dozen galleries that most are consistent with the kind of work that I do that specialize in abstract art. I would then, once I've got a name of half a dozen or a dozen, I would go and go to Google Maps and I would create a list. I'd mark them. I would have directions for all of them. And then I would get in my car with a half a dozen of my best work, and I would go from one gallery to the other. When they're not busy, it would be like on a Tuesday morning, like I say, on Tuesday morning, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning, and I'd go around from one to the other, directly pitching. I know they don't want you to do that because they want crowd control, but that's what I would do. Does that make sense?
Yes, I love it.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. My name is Beth. I'm actually living, I'm no longer living in the Bay Area, and I'm going through a job switch because my master's degree, the area that I got my master's degree in, is just, it's not working for me, and it hasn't been working for me for a while.
What did you get the master's in?
I got my master's in instructional technologies.
Huh.
And for a variety of different reasons that I won't get into, because there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm now living in the Midwest, and I'm not living in a metropolitan area. And I looked at the bigger picture, you know, where technology is headed, and all the changes, and all those great things that used to turn me on when I was in my late 20s and 30s. I don't think I can keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason. And I don't mind incorporating some of that into a job, but I just can't make it my main job.
Okay.
And I wind up getting pigeonholed into project management, which is my least favorite thing in the world to do.
Okay.
So I've been using your book. I've narrowed it down to a couple
of... Which book? I've written six. Which one?
Cool Careers for Dummies.
Okay.
I used it before. Mm-hmm. These are things that I've got down in terms of things that really do it for me.
Okay.
Out here, they're really trying to push more sustainable agriculture, and then that leads into problems with watershed, and this area is becoming fracking central, which
yes.
really scares me because of what happened, you know, in Kentucky and all the coal mining and what that's going to do to the watershed here and how much water is going to be taken from the Great Lakes region. And then off into a third area is gemology. So I have been talking to some people on LinkedIn about the gemology, and it's kind of meh. I'm going to go to a workshop in August. It's only $10 to go. I have been trying to cold call, you know, using some of your tips. Haven't gotten very far in terms of the jewelry and the gemology. And how do you change your profile on LinkedIn when you don't have a clue which way you're going?
Okay, let's get you clear, first of all. I need to ask some questions about each of the three areas. The instructional technology, I understand you're not the techie, and I understand that you're not going to keep, you said you can't keep up, but I want to see what nuggets we can, and you're not a project manager, but I want to find out the nuggets within that that you might want to incorporate, as you said you might. I want to find out a little more about the gemology. I want to find out some background. So what first really motivated you to get a master's in instructional technology?
Because I honestly believed that it was going to be an open source area in which people could exchange information, and I really believed that people might be interested in using the technology in innovative ways, and all I've done is, what I've found is that that's not true, and it also kind of happened at the same time that No Child Left Behind happened, and I really wanted to do work with kids, and it hasn't panned out. Publishing is always up in the air.
Okay, this is my way just to learn about you. So what kept you, for example, you know, every school now, or many schools, have a person who is their school's IT person who goes and helps make sure that the classrooms or the internet is, the servers are working right, and the training the teachers and maybe training the kids. What kept you from, if you're not going to be able to, you know, the schools are always behind the curve in technology. What kept you from, or what keeps you now from simply going to a school district and say you'd like to be the instructional technology person at a school or for a district?
The No Child Left Behind highly certified have to get a master's in education. My master's in education does not count.
Are you sure that, you know, I'm well aware that for certain direct classroom positions that's correct, but there are also... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. In Ohio, that's the case.
Okay, I'll move off that. Let's say that I waved a magic wand. Do you like the general concept? Would you like that kind of job?
Maybe.
Okay, so in other words, there are these after-school tutoring centers. There's like Kumon Math, and then there's the one that's owned by Kaplan Centers, and then there's a bunch of these that are Sylvan Learning, that are not credential-bound. These are private companies that nonetheless are using technology a lot. Would you enjoy working at one of those places as their instructional technology person?
No.
Okay, it's good, but I'm trying to learn about you. What is it about that is a turnoff?
They want to use their rote template, and they're not interested in breaking out of the box.
So you're sounding, I'm getting a feel for who you are. You're about sustainability, freedom, creativity, very much what we'll call Bay Area values. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. And so gemology is also going to make, tell me, was your original interest in gemology about making kind of funky jewelry, that kind of thing?
I've always had an interest in antiques and history, and I wanted to learn more about doing the cutting and the appraising and that end of it.
But okay, what's the turnoff now? But you said you implied you've gotten turned off to that.
People within it's been very hard to break into, well, with the cold calling here hasn't worked so well. And within LinkedIn, I've had some pretty kind of mixed results in terms of asking for feedback. And I am going to go, like you had mentioned in your book, there is a workshop coming up in August, and there is an organization that's close by that does do appraisals and things like that, and they are involved in the GEM Society, so I am reaching out to them as well. But in terms of making the cold calls around here, it hasn't been so great.
Would it be easier? Sometimes it is easier or more effective, in the same way as I mentioned to the previous caller. Are there prestigious places that sell antique jewelry that you might go in and chat with them in their stores, doing a classic informational interview? Where you're saying you've always had this interest in antique jewelry, its appraisal, cutting, etc., and you're not sure whether you should, for example, eventually aspire to selling stuff like that on eBay or opening your own store or simply working for a fine quality auction house and asking for their advice about what exists in rural Ohio. Would that be better than trying to just call?
I did send out that sample letter that you had in Cool Careers for Dummies to the nicest auction house that we have here, the highest end auction house that we have in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a reply. I did go and show up in person. Unfortunately, they were all busy working, getting ready for the upcoming auction, and the lady who does the gem appraisals is independent, but I am going to follow up with her.
Okay, that seems good. Two more. I want to go another direction. You sound most passionate about worrying about the watershed in Ohio.
The watershed and food around here.
Okay. Should you be making a list of the nonprofits that are, if they don't even need to necessarily be based here? I want to go back. What skills do you have and not have with relate to instructional technology? Could you develop a simple little online, either a brochure or a online little video or something that is educational? In other words, maybe either that would be used for lobbying purposes, to lobby legislators to have anti-fracking policies, or some used for fundraising donations. Do you have those kind of skills?
Yeah, and I could work with somebody or get a kid from around here who needs something for their portfolio to do the animation.
Okay, so if we said that there were two areas you should therefore pursue, number one, you need to make a list of all those nonprofits that focus on the food issues and the water issues that you care about.
Okay.
And tell them your skill set. You have a master's in IT. and that you can do this, this, and this, and you would like to help them in creating digital approaches either to fundraising, lobbying, education, etc., relating to the food and water issues. And then that, so that's path one. And you do that with a combination of writing letters, following up with phone calls. You notice in my book, I do have something called the call, email, call, call method, which is that you call up front after hours to let them know you're going to be sending them an email, because we're all overwhelmed with email. And that puts a human face on it. Then you send the email. Then you, if you haven't heard from them, you follow up in a week and maybe even follow up once more. If you do that with that, if you use that call, email, call, call method with 10 or 20 of these nonprofits, you're more likely to get a response. And then on the other fork of your, the other fork of the road, it is to indeed make a point of talking to the people at one or more, that independent woman who is working at that that auction house, that antique jewelry auction house, and see where that lens leads you. Does that make sense?
Yes, those are all wonderful ideas. I've got a couple people in my network that are doing work with Watershed Project, and I got a hot lead at the farmers market for this one position. It's kind of an admin position for this really great group here. But it could definitely lead to other stuff.
Okay. Well, I think you've now got a nice to-do list. What I would urge you to do is, people so often, when they get off the phone or they finish a session, you know, client session, one of my career counseling client sessions, they get excited, but then they procrastinate. I would urge you to, when you get off the phone, make a list now in light of our conversation of what you want to do right now, Beth. Today, some of the stuff you can do today, because even though it's a Sunday, you can do phone, you can do email, you can leave voicemails, etc. Make a list of everything you need to do, get right on it, and so you'll build positive momentum rather than have the momentum dissipate. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay, Beth, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemco. I'm glad that even though you've moved to Columbus, Ohio, you're still a listener to Work with Marty Nemco. I appreciate it a lot. Oh, she's gone. All right, we are out of time already. So I will simply say thank you to my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers. That's going to devote the whole show to that, plus interspersing my favorite new career tips. So until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we really do find comfort among those who agree with us, but growth among those who don't.